let's start things out on a high note as we get on the telephone line and welcome in from ABC6 in Providence, our friend Nick Coit. Hello there, Nick.
Hello there, Dr. Kimball. How are you?
Wonderful. A bit of a British accent today. You sound very dignified, Nick.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, you know, with a dignified introduction by you, I felt this coming on. I'm not sure what character this is or where it comes from, but why not?
I think we should do the entire segment like this, Nick, and people will listen later and say, what were those boys doing?
Oh, jolly good. Sounds good to me, of course.
Let's see. How have you been since last we talked?
Good. I'm trying to think of the last time we talked. Was I in the great city of Chicago?
Yes, you were.
The last time we talked, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's been fun. That was a fun march. Unfortunate, the run came to an end for Providence right after I talked to you. But, hey, look, if you're going to get beat by anybody, you get beat by the national champs. That's pretty darn good. So, and you know, it was a great, great march, great month, great college basketball season for us. So, you know, can't complain. And now we're on to what's going on here with all the Boston teams. It's a busy time.
Now, were your ears burning? Because shortly after you were on with us from Chicago, we had John O'Hurley from Seinfeld, Jay Peterman, on. And, of course, you know, he's a Providence grad. And we were talking about Coach Cooley. And I related to him the story of you teeing him up to sing a little Sinatra.
Oh, you did? Oh, I would be very interested to hear what his response was to that.
He is, well, obviously he is a big fan of Coach Cooley and everything Providence.
Well, I'm a big fan of the Urban Sombrero, so John O'Hurley's right up my alley, I'll tell you.
Let's see, Urban Sombrero, maybe we could get Red Sox hitters to wear one of those. It couldn't hurt, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting start to the year, right? Well, interesting is a word. Bad is another. Yeah, the offense is just—it's been sputtery. It just hasn't all been there. They just haven't really seemed to come together yet, Rich. And the disappointing part is that I don't think the pitching has been really that bad. That's the tough part. Is that we thought the opposite was going to happen with this team. So you hope it comes around. You expect it to come around with some of the guys that are in this lineup. You know, but at the same time, that bottom of the order is. It's a rough patch right now, and, you know, they've had a couple of moments here, but, you know, you need more out of Bobby Dalbec. You need more out of, you know, whoever's 7, 8, 9. Like, that's got to come around if the Sox want to turn things around here. And, you know, the tough part is you struggle in April going into May. They always say, and I'm a believer of it, you know, you can't win the division in April, but you can certainly lose it. And this road trip was a rough one for the Sox.
Well, of course, the Yankees are red hot, 10 straight wins for them. But we knew everybody, with the exception of the Orioles, everybody has improved themselves in the division. And now I'm not ready to pull the plug on Chaim Bloom yet, but there were some things you knew, like Jackie Bradley probably can't be a full-time major league outfielder anymore. And they don't really have an answer for that. Bobby Dalbec, the only answer is to platoon with Franchi Cordero. I mean, and then Matt Barnes, who just hasn't been right since the All-Star break last year. Okay, we got Hansel Robles. Everything is fine.
And you mentioned the name Franchi Cordero, and my mind immediately goes to, well, huh, how did you come to acquire Franchi Cordero in your organization? Oh, that's right. You threw away a guy that was a first-round pick that was a, you know, I guess at least decent hitter, a young hitter, and now he's one of the top five in the American League in Andrew Benintendi. Go figure. And that was a guy that played outfield, wasn't it? Yeah, it was. So, yeah, look, it's early in the season. You know, you never know. We'll see if things turn around. You feel like the lineup's going to hit better at some point. But, yeah, a lot of questions there, Rich. And you know, the first one that came to mind when I think of the outfield, too, was, you know, what were we doing at the beginning of the year here? You know, putting Christian Arroyo out there. He's not an outfielder. He's an infielder. You're the Boston Red Sox. You can't afford a right fielder that's right-handed to platoon with Jackie Bradley. Like, some of these things, you know, you're scratching your head about. But, again, it's early. You never know. We'll see if things turn around here.
No, and I'm still of the mind that picking up Story was a good move. He'll hit eventually. And I think, overall, he's done a pretty good job adjusting to second base.
Yeah, he's had his moment, but you know, you're right. It's an adjustment that you're going through. And remember, spring training was only, what, a couple of weeks long? So it's not like he had a full month and a half like you usually do to make the adjustment. So I think he's been doing it on the fly. And, you know, I think he'll come around, both with the bat and with the glove. I like the story move at the time. You know, we'll see. The only thing I didn't like about it was how it rubbed Xander Bogaerts the wrong way, it seemed. And so, you know, hopefully that comes around too. But, you know, long season ago.
Well, now you mentioned Bogaerts. And is that going to be the measuring stick for how we judge Chaim Bloom 10 years down the road? If he can't keep at least one of those two guys, and ideally both Bogaerts and Devers, then don't you have to say that he failed as a GM?
I think less Bogaerts and more Devers. Look, I'm a big Bogaerts guy. I'd like to keep him around. But at least if they were to move on from Bogaerts in the offseason, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but if they were to move on, they at least could explain to you how in the organization it makes sense. Not signing him to a long-term deal. You now have Story. You've drafted Marcelo Meyer, you know, in the first round. Like, there's guys in your organization where you say, okay, you might be able to explain that away. A 25-year-old power-hitting third baseman who could be in your organization, who you developed for years, not signing him to a big long-term deal, Devers, and if they let him go, that one is going to be tough to explain to me. That one's going to be tough for me to swallow because, again, age, situation, left-handed bat, all of that. That to me, I don't know. If I'm choosing between the two, I'm choosing Devers. It makes more sense. I'd like to keep them both. But either way, it's going to rub some fans the wrong way for sure.
We're talking with Nick Coit here on Downtown. All right, we've had a few days. Everybody now can project adequately what's going to happen with these Patriot draft picks 5-7 years down the road. Is there anything sillier, Nick, in all of sports broadcasting and sports journalism than people grading NFL draft?
Nope. Simple. Nope. The thing is with the draft, we don't know. We won't know until a couple of years down the road. They can grade it all they want. I think I remember a lot of experts saying that N'Keal Harry was a high grade when it came to a first round pick for the Patriots. How's that worked out? Not very good. So believe me, there's, it's silly to grade now. You don't know until a few years down the road. The only thing I say is, and I look at the draft, I say, okay, where did they address their needs? Where did they have needs? Where did they address things? And, you know, for me, the Patriots draft, I like that they added and they made an emphasis on adding speed. Because I think you need to add some speed and youth to your roster on both sides of the ball, and I think they did that, particularly in the second and third round. Could they have done it in the first round? I think they could have. I wasn't a fan of the Cole Strange pick. I think he can be a decent player for them, and I think he can start day one, and that's a plus. But the Patriots organization has done very well, Rich, in developing offensive linemen on days two, guys that they take on day two and three, and turning them into starters and studs for them in their offensive line. So I would have used the first round pick on a position of need where they could add some more speed, whether it is a corner or maybe a linebacker or something like that. But look, if he does turn out to be a good player for them, it works out for them. So, you know, I guess it is what it is. But that was my only thought there.
Well, and also, as you know, some teams rely exclusively on the draft to build their organization. And for Bill Belichick, that's just one more piece. He'll be looking at trades. He'll be looking at free agency. There will be guys out there this summer that will become available that will all of a sudden end up in the starting lineup for the Patriots, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. They're always scouring for that kind of talent too. You hope with the draft that they hit on some of these higher picks because they do need it, Rich. People say that the Patriots stink in the draft the last 7-8 years. They don't stink in the draft the last 7-8 years. Look at their track record, and if you look at those drafts closely, the later rounds, day three, that's always a sweet spot for Bill Belichick. He finds diamonds in the rough, and he turns them into players for his organization. I was just mentioning guard, guys like Joe Tooney. He got Mike Owenu, who's going to be a starting guard for them in the sixth round. He gets James White. He gets, like, guys like Ramondre Stevenson last year in the fourth round, but the higher end talent, first, second, and maybe bleeding into the third round, that's where they need to hit high. And so this draft, I think, is going to be really judged on what Cole Strange and Tyquan Thornton can do for you, particularly, I guess, with the skill position. If Tyquan Thornton becomes a player for you, that's going to be a major plus to this draft class. If he doesn't, we might be looking back at this and saying, I don't know, this might not have been the best of drafts. So they need to bring in some more higher-end talent. Hopefully they can hit here in the draft.
All right, Nick, who makes a deeper playoff run, the Bruins or the Celtics?
I think the Boston Celtics. I do think that they're going to bounce back tonight. I think a lot's been made of how good Milwaukee was in that game, but I thought the Celtics defensively were okay in game one. They held them to 101. Like, I don't think you can do a ton better. They just got to find some more offense. I think Jaylen Brown will be better here going forward. With the Bruins, this is a tough opponent for them. You know, regular season going into last night, they outscored them 16-1, and then they beat them 5-1 in the game one. And it's a little bit skewed with the 5-1. I don't think it was that dominant because it was 2-1 early in the third. But this Carolina team, they're relentless. They're disciplined. It's going to be really tough for the Bruins here to try to get past them. And even if they do, the East is a beast when it comes to the NHL this year. So if I had to put my money on it, I'd probably go with the Celtics. And look, I'm already a step ahead because they're in the second round.
There you go.
You know, we'll see how it plays out. Yeah.
Nick Coit, ABC6 in Providence. Nick, great talking with you. As always, enjoy the rest of your day. I know this is probably the high point, but we'll catch up with you again soon.
Sounds good, Dr. Kimball. It was jolly good catching up with you.
Oh, such a delight, Nicholas. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Au revoir, mon ami. It's Nick Coit, ABC6 in Providence on Downtown.